All right, I've got you. I'm going to lift you to expand your ribcage. Help you come, nice and slowly. Come on, a few more times. Up and down, up and down, up and down. That's better. I'm going to hold you up under your shoulders to keep your ribcage expanding. Oh, I'm going to throw up. Breathe more slowly, Liz. Try deep, slow breaths. That might ease the nausea. Better. I suppose my breakfast's too far along to come back up. Let's get a look at you. He hit you full force with his knee.
Don't think I can stand.
No, don't stand. Let me straighten your legs and you can take it easy for a bit. It takes that many men to subdue him. Monroe was right about him. He's angry about the deaths of those people. We didn't expect him to go after you like that. I'm sorry. I think I'll be all right. Just sore. The brig actually got between us part way. No, there are no tears in the abdomen wall. I want to walk. I have to get up. All right, lean on me.
Oh!
You all right?
Just dizzy on standing. I will lean on you. Yes, I'll be sore.
Well, we've got to walk past the cells.
All right.
You didn't like that, did you?
You in there, be quiet. Don't hurt him, Captain. Let him shout if he wants to.
Sure you're all right?
Keep getting waves of dizziness.
Open the door, please, soldier.
Let me rest a moment. The nausea keeps coming and going.
I'm taking you to the infirmary.
I don't need the infirmary.
Liz, I think the Brigadier can manage without you for a half hour or so.
I don't want any heavy-handed tactics against these people. We don't need a military response. Let's check their complaints in good faith, Doctor.
I can see to that.
You need me to vote with you. Just do some of that hocus-pocus of yours if you're worried about me.
Hocus pocus?
That Chinese medicine you always boast about.
Boast? Me? What on earth are you talking about?
Yes, you boast. You boast all the time. Electronic acupuncture. You said it could speed recovery.
I don't need electronic acupuncture for something like this. I don't need electronics at all. I'm a Time Lord.
Well, then do something.
I have powers you've never guessed, and it's not boasting.
Oh, you're always blathering on about being a Time Lord, and it never gets you anywhere. Oh.
It's all right, Liz. It's all right. Everything's all right now. There you are, my dear.
Where are we?
Back in the conference room. You there, what do you think you're doing?
Just collecting a teacup, sir.
Oh, all right then. Leave the clean ones. Your eyes are enormous, Liz. I wouldn't hurt you. Is the nausea gone?
Yes, what was that?
Brief contact with my life force. Very handy for curing nausea and headaches. Acts as a regulator. I didn't mean to overpower you. Would you like tea, my dear?
Yes. Is she all right?
Yes, just get about your business. All right, here you are. Drink it slowly.
You should be more polite with the canteen staff, Doctor.
I didn't like him hanging about, eavesdropping. Thank you.
Miss Shaw, how are you?
I'm all right, Brigadier.
Would you like to go to the infirmary?
No, I'm able to perform my duties.
Monroe was right. That Hawthorne fellow is a brute. He's been subdued. But how the deuce does he know so much about UNIT?
And about Liz? Look, that man also named specific victims. These protesters, whoever they are, have got some genuine grievances.
I'm well aware of that, Miss Shaw, and I will keep my word. We shall look into Hawthorne's accusations.
Well, we'd better. He may just be right in spite of his brutality.
What, that a NATO research group has been flinging trespassers onto an electrified fence? Do try to maintain your perspective.
Brigadier, it is a lamentable flaw in the human condition that human beings commit the worst atrocities in the name of the highest ideals. Four men and a woman certainly are dead.
Yes, and undoubtedly there is a reason behind their deaths. But the fact of the matter is that TSRG security had nothing to do with those deaths. How stupid do you think they are to kill local people and leave the bodies lying about the ground? Corporal Bell, get me the files marked Northern Research Classified B in the locked file cabinet. I've got the key.
Very good, sir.
We've got to find out what killed those people. And we've got to pacify that mob out there before UNIT loses all credibility. Yes, what is it? I see. Tell them no comment for now, but we are opening an investigation. Television cameras out front. The police have taken away the rock-throwing elements, but they say they won't interfere with peaceful demonstrators.
So UNIT is in the spotlight, called to account for another group's scandal. If UNIT's early investigation of TSRG failed to be thorough, then UNIT is responsible.
Yes, Miss Shaw, and as I have said too many times to count...
Twice, I believe.
UNIT will investigate Hawthorne's charges.
Here you are, sir.
Corporal Bell, just set the folders on the table. This information is what puts paid to any murder charges against TSRG.
It's a key punch schedule.
Three key punch schedules. There are three men on shift and one on dispatch at TSRG. Each footman must walk a patrol. Every 5 to 7 minutes, he reaches a punch station where he inserts a key into his time clock.
Could they rearrange their schedules? Have one chap cover two time clock schedules?
Impossible. One man walks a route inside the buildings. Another walks a route along the outside of each building in the compound. The third man walks the inner fence area and the ingress roads. There can be no doubling of their punch schedules. One person could not maintain two time clocks.
Then perhaps others were involved, but the personnel at the plant had been guilty of high-handed tactics. The accusation has some credibility.
Yes, it certainly does. Doctor, you're assigned to review the autopsy reports on the bodies. Let's see if there's any evidence that these chaps were actually thrown onto that particular fence. If not, find out what actually happened to them. And Miss Shaw, as you seem quite recovered, I want you to get out to the TSRG site. We'll give you a driver and staff car. Investigate the site itself.
After what she's been through, Liz is highly qualified at forensics. She should follow up on the bodies. I should visit the plant. Doctor, I'll be fine, especially if I have a driver. I'm sure the Brigadier will select somebody sturdy and dependable to look after me. It's not safe.
Utter nonsense. She is a Cambridge scientist. Not even a part of UNIT at all, not officially. She's ideal. She shall appear as an impartial third party. You would accomplish nothing except to offend everybody, Doctor. As you always do.
Me? I'll have you know I have carried out highly delicate diplomatic operations on more planets than you could view with a good telescope.
We can't view any planets with a good telescope.
You can't? What year is this?
Look, never mind. If you want this emergency to be brought under control and dealt with, get to your assignments. Miss Shaw, I'll lay a car on for you and arrange for your introduction. It's a long drive to TSRG. You'll have plenty of time to review their mission statement and organizational charts.
Outside, the temperature had crept within 10 degrees of the freezing mark. A white, heatless winter sun shed cold light across the frost-rimed ground and hedges. A few dozen police officers, trying not to blow on their gloved hands in the cold, walked back and forth in front of the crowd to keep them back and allow a way for cars in and out of the main gate. Behind the closed gate, the unit soldiers still stood at the ready, dressed as regular army under padded chest protectors, but their rifles had been replaced with heavily padded riot truncheons and fiberglass shields. Jimmy Monroe, bundled into a heavy army-issued parka, entered the small guardhouse. Its walls were enclosed, reinforced glass from the waist up. He had an excellent view of the crowd. "All quiet?" he asked Sergeant Benton. Benton sat in a position to watch the crowd as steadily as it watched him. "They've gotten pretty quiet the last 10 minutes or so, probably from seeing some of their lot hauled off in paddy wagons or dragged in our gates," Monroe said. "If you say so, sir." Monroe was surprised at Benton's caution and unease. "What do you think they're about?" "I think they're getting ready to rush us," the big sergeant said. "Why would they rush us?" Benton would not so much as look away from the crowd. "I'm not sure, but I think this lot's far more organized than they let on. At least some of them are. This whole thing seems planned. It's all too well timed." "Look at those coppers," Monroe said. "They don't seem concerned." Indeed, the police seemed far more concerned about the cold than the crowd. Monroe watched the crowd for a long moment, then picked up the telephone. "I'll tell the lads to stay ready."
"So what you're saying, Brigadier, is that you want me to maintain a highly visible presence at this TSRG place as an investigator. Ask a lot of questions, and then report that all is well, even if all is not well." "It is imperative that we get these protesters away from our own gates. We can investigate TSRG as thoroughly as you like, Miss Shaw, over the long term. But for the moment, our main goal has to be the calming of public fears and the easing of public scrutiny, for your sakes as well as for units."
"What do you mean, for our sakes?"
"You are both highly valuable commodities. Any government would be glad enough to get its hands on you for the information you've gained after your experiences here. So if you want to live the lives you've chosen for yourselves, you must ensure that those experiences are never forced out into the open. Especially you, Doctor. An inquiry into exactly who you are and what your history with UNIT has been could turn you into the property of whatever government should happen to get possession of you.
Brigadier, you and I have an agreement."
"Yes, that I house you and provide you a lab. But if I am discredited or forced to take a fall, then you will be out in the cold. And there are wolves at the door, Doctor."
"So if UNIT is forced to disclose its activities..."
"We will not be able to hide you, and demands for a full investigation into UNIT will result in a full inquiry into the man who has spearheaded so many of our strategies and innovative methods. And the first item to be confiscated for investigation will be that TARDIS of yours."
"We'd better do as he says, Liz."
"What do you mean, we? I'm a British citizen, too, with loyalties to this country and to those people."
"What, the people who were killed? Do you think I have no loyalties to them? I'm not willing to sacrifice them. We'll get to the bottom of this, but we must get those protesters away from our gates." "Yes. Yes, as necessary. Use your own discretion, Monroe. Lock down the second floor and all outlying buildings at once. Start pushing them out with whatever you have. No weapons fire. Use counter-riot tactics. Get them cleared out of this building. It's turned into a riot."
"You mean a well-coordinated rush if they've succeeded in getting into this building. These aren't ragtag protesters. They're following a plan.
Monroe, are you there? Lock down the labs. Those are highest priority. Contain the intruders and push them out."
"Who are you calling?"
"The motor pool. We can get out through the rear of this building and cross the back drive to get there. I'll escort you myself. I want you on your way to TSRG without delay."
Getting to the rear of the building, as it turned out, was difficult. The lifts had been shut down. The doctor grumbled about all this nonsense and disappeared back into the conference room, unwilling to get into fisticuffs or a highly visible confrontation with what he now considered obstreperous riffraff. The very suggestion that these people might end his cozy arrangement with UNIT had suddenly made him quite reluctant to rely on his own bravado.
The Brigadier quickly ushered her towards the little-used narrow steps that had once been the service stairs. This stairway was unheated and seldom used. As she might have predicted, he had a key. It took some work in the ancient lock, but at last she heard a loud snap. Then he pushed the door open, and she saw a narrow wooden stairway that had been built either in the previous century or at the dawn of this one. She found herself hurried down the stairs with him. From the other side of the walls around them, they could hear people shouting and cursing, and the soldiers struggling with them and ordering them out. Alarms were sounding. As they descended past a narrow window on a tiny corner landing, a yell from outside went up. A rock bounced off the glass, and then a second rock crashed through it. Glass shards were flung across the landing and across the nearest steps. The Brigadier seized her arm to stop her, and they both pressed flat against the wall and waited. "So much for the secret stairs," she muttered. But the rabble, though they had taken the soldiers by surprise with a determined rush on the grounds, could not match the expertise of a militia. Within moments, the shouting in the building became more distant, and the outcry outside became louder as the protesters were pushed out. At last, they heard the sound of police sirens. Then, audible especially from the broken window, the shouts of Jimmy Monroe, Benton, and other experienced men called to each other. They had organized the unit people and were now outflanking the intruders in an orderly push. Clearly, unit had regained control. After another 60 seconds of silent waiting against the wall, the Brigadier said,
"Well, that's done then. We'd better hurry."
And so, 20 minutes later, Liz Shaw found herself in the back seat of yet another unmarked staff car, her coat and gloves left behind and replaced with bulkier unit garb in case she needed it. Her overnight case had been stowed in the back and now sat at her feet. Boyd was driving again. They exited the unit grounds by the back gate, a distant, desolate exit far enough from the buildings and major traffic routes to be unremarkable and unnoticed. Meanwhile, at the main gate, two more paddy wagons were lumbering off, and police in riot gear, alongside unit soldiers who wore regular army uniforms, were keeping a score of people on their faces on the ground, hands spread. The others were dispersing. The young lad from the canteen had shown his pass and been let out on his bicycle, with many friendly warnings from the unit soldiers to be careful. But he was not bothered and was soon out of sight of the sentries. He swiftly took several turns across busy intersections. The black staff car, speeding away from London, rushed past him. He navigated his way past busy streets to narrower city lanes crowded with small offices and a few shops. At last, he pulled up in front of a pub, locked his bicycle, and entered. In spite of the early morning hour, the door was unlocked, and another man sat at the bar, nursing along a cup of hot tea. "Got it," and the young man pulled out a folder from his wool coat. They opened it and spread it before themselves on the bar top.
"Elizabeth Shaw," the older man said.
"Pretty thing." "But I think she might not actually be part of UNIT," the youth said.
"Oh, if they've got a folder on her, she's a part of UNIT," the older man assured him.
On the drive north, as the city gave way to quieter scenery, Corporal Boyd deliberately chose secondary roads, and he spoke frequently over the staff car's telephone, which provided a direct link to UNIT. He was trying to arrange accommodations for her. At last, he gave up. "The TSRG scientists live on site for 6 weeks at a time," he told her. "Highly compressed schedules. They say there's no room for you on site if you plan to stay overnight." "Of course I shall have to stay overnight," she snapped. "It will be noon before we arrive. I shall stay at any bed and breakfast or at a pub if I can find one." He was not offended by her tone. "Keeping you out from any after-hours conversations might be their way of safeguarding themselves," he said. This insightful comment sparked her curiosity. "What do you know about TSRG?"
"I know this much. If TSRG is shut down because of the brutality of its security force, it can then destroy evidence of its on-site research without anybody noticing."
"Anytime a research group is moved, it destroys old materials."
"You think TSRG itself is creating this turmoil over its security people?"
"I'm saying that's a possible conclusion of many possible conclusions, Professor," he told her. "Those local people who storm UNIT today behave like a trained army. And they're poor people overall, so who financed them to come down to London and stage this protest? Who are you?"
Now he afforded her the briefest smile and a second glance in the rearview mirror. "Corporal Boyd of UNIT, but in my other life I'm an information coordinator for NATO security."
"You're from NATO on assignment with UNIT?"
Officially, I'm just a driver and security escort. I think you would do well to let me stay nearby.
Yes, I will. But why have you been so direct with me? For Liz realized that Boyd was still a NATO agent who had slipped into unit under orders. The free world was spying on the free world. Oddly enough, she found this comforting. We don't know what will happen if you are perceived as a threat to whatever operation is underway up there.
Aren't you worried that I'll tell the Brigadier about your background with NATO security?
I intend to tell him myself once you make your report to the public, and I make mine to my superiors at NATO.
He glanced at her in the rearview mirror.
All I want from you is a promise to keep me nearby so I can keep you safe.
Yes, all right. She realized that in his friendly, informative way, he had actually reined her in and even put her in her place much more thoroughly than she had done with him by being snappish. She regretted her bad mood, for suddenly she liked him. He shared her distrust of this entire situation.
Well, Doctor, what have you found?
The doctor looked up in annoyance at Unit's commanding officer.
You don't give a fellow much time, do you? He asked.
His workbench, normally cluttered with small heaps of jury-rigged diagnostic devices for his TARDIS, had been cleaned off and now displayed several stacks of papers and folders, all in orderly rows. This was a bad sign. It told the Brigadier that the doctor had not done very much.
How's the riot going?
Cleared off for now. Haven't you looked at any of these autopsy reports?
The photographs were quite enough for a start. The doctor opened up one folder and slid out an array of large black-and-white photographs of a male victim.
Look at that gut wound,
the Brigadier murmured.
Is that from electricity?
Yes and no, the doctor told him. It's not from an electrified fence, I can tell you that much. What sort of weaponry do these TSRG security forces carry?
Conventional.
No tasers, no shock-type stun guns. Lethbridge Stewart cocked an eyebrow.
Doctor, please be serious. This is not science fiction.
This exasperated the Time Lord.
Well, I know that, Brigadier. Nevertheless, you have got victims here who died from some type of electrical discharge.
But not on the fence. How do you know?
Well, for one thing, you could never toss four different people onto an electrified fence and get this type of burn mark each time. And secondly, whatever caused the high voltage to discharge through these people, it was designed to discharge into a target. It was focused. Only, the density of their bodies seems to have caused a great inefficiency in the energy discharge that hit them. That's why the scorching and charring are so severe. Intrigued, the Brigadier leaned against one of the cabinets and folded his arms.
Doctor, energy discharge was attempted as a weapon during both world wars. No matter how the weapon is engineered, it always comes out too dangerous to the people using it, and too ineffective overall.
Yes, the doctor murmured. Time will make a difference. He glanced at the Brigadier. If they were just ordinary people, then what were they doing there?
And who stood to gain by killing them in such a horrible way?
Not a very cheerful place, Boyd observed as they drove up to a checkpoint at the third fenced perimeter. The building, stark and clumsy, might have been prison barracks as well as a research facility. Liz had assumed that a NATO research facility would be state-of-the-art, but TSRG was nothing more than old brick buildings and a few heavy windows.
Used to be an airplane facility. See how long and narrow the main building is? That's where they put them together. You're to meet Doctors LeFranc and Schepansky. I'll escort you to your welcoming committee.
This bit of news startled her. Not Rene Schepansky. He was driving slowly, looking for a place to park, but all the curbsides had red cones or enormous "No parking here" signs blocking the way. He afforded her a quick glance in the rearview mirror.
Yes, Dr. Rene Schepansky.
For a moment, Liz said nothing as her mind raced back to her first few years in a graduate program. She remembered Rene Schepansky as a person always wandering from place to place, looking for somebody to tell her how to do things, looking for someone to help her figure out a problem, looking for someone to feel sorry for her, looking for someone to give her a leg up when it was clear she was never going to do well on an exam. One of Liz's own teachers, in a moment of social blundering before a few of his favorite students, had once asked himself out loud, "How did Schepansky ever get into university in the first place?"
Yet, here she was, doing research for NATO. Dr. Shapansky is an American, I believe, Boyd said. He at last selected a spot hemmed in by red cones and gently eased the staff car right over them, crushing one or two and sending several others rolling about. Yes, from New York. Quite a strong accent. She's an automation wizard, she and Dr. LeFranc. Dr. LeFranc serves as liaison with the public, with Dr. Shapansky assisting her. No wonder the locals hated them, Liz thought. She had no confidence in Dr. Shapansky, but she hoped that perhaps Dr. LeFranc would be a perceptive and intelligent contact.
What? You again? Have you found anything? The brigadier asked as the doctor entered the brigadier's office.
No, not yet. I'm off to see one of the pathologists. There's just one other thing. And the doctor put a finger to his lips in a gesture he had when he was trying to sound casual about something that worried him. Lethbridge Stewart shot him a startled, serious look from under his eyebrows.
Yes? What?
You know the High Council of the Time Lords has damaged my memory, Brigadier.
Yes, you've certainly whinged about it enough.
The doctor didn't even bother to make a retort. He passed the back of his hand across his forehead. Before, when the boy was with me.
Jamie, yes?
I seem to remember them. They fired at us and there was radiation all over the planet. Dreadful radiation. The brigadier shook his head.
No, not here, Doctor. Not anything UNIT had a part in.
Weren't they in the sewers? Didn't they make contact with a power-mad fellow who was quite rich? Recognition Dawn.
You called them Cybermen. Nothing about radiation, though. Anyway, not that I ever knew, not on the surface of this planet.
I can't remember. I can't get it straight.
Have the Cybermen come back? I thought we'd given them a sound thrashing.
The what? Who?
Cybermen! That's what you called them!
I'm getting it all confused. Wasn't there another attack, not on Earth?
I don't know. UNIT doesn't know anything about what you've done out there, Doctor. Are we in danger of more of your little green men?
The doctor seemed to clear his head. He became resolute. Hardly. No indications whatsoever of any type of landing force or extraterrestrial agents. Then he became almost apologetic. Not an idea to take seriously at present. It's not likely anyway. I'll be back in a couple hours. The guard at the final checkpoint had given them directions to follow once they got inside the main building, but Corporal Boyd was quite lost, and so was Liz. They walked up and down hallways for a long time, following patterns of room numbers that led to other patterns of room numbers that had nothing to do with any coherent numbering system. At last, they found a dark stairway that seemed to lead into a basement area. If she'd been by herself, Liz would not have ventured down, but Corporal Boyd, frustrated by the systematic heedlessness of the place, led the way, and she followed. After all, she thought, the doctor's lab was the nicest lab at UNIT, and it was in the basement. This was clearly a mistake, for after several paces down a dark and slippery basement floor, they smelled the unmistakable aroma of old food and cleansing materials.
"It's the pantry!"
he exclaimed. She found herself staring at an enormous, reinforced steel door. "Want to see what's for supper?"
"Why not? I hope there's not a stack of dead villagers in there."
And he pulled the door open. The interior was pitch black and cool, but not frigid. She reached in, felt a switch, and turned on a string of electric bulbs. "Oh!" she exclaimed, startled. For instead of a neat array of canned and wrapped foods, she found herself staring at row after row of carcasses.
"It's pigs! Hogs! What hit them?"
he asked. "Well, they've been gutted for butchering, bled out. I suppose that's why the smell isn't that bad." She glanced at him.
"No, look, beyond the first few," he said. "Go in. The door opens from the inside as well. We can't be locked in."
She shot a glance at the door to make sure, but it was as he said. They entered, and then she saw what had seized his attention at once. All of the carcasses had been skinned, an unusual procedure for the butchering of hogs, and several were badly damaged, forelegs blown off with massive scorch marks visible on the flesh. Several had their heads missing, but Liz's analytical gaze could not make sense of several of the wounds.
"This isn't from a conventional blast," she said. "Not this one. Look at this."
And she called him over to one of the carcasses. Half its head was gone, obliterated by something that had left seared flesh behind. But something hard, almost chitinous, was embedded in the stump of leg remaining. This hard shield ran into the chest area and then disappeared.
"Perhaps it was bone marrow," he said.
But as she drew nearer to one of the intact hogs,
which hung head downward. She saw that its belly slid open and the entrails removed as though for conventional butchering was charred. She knew it was risky, but her curiosity got the best of her. She thrust her hand into the gaping hole. "This wound was caused by a knife," she said after a moment. "Typical of a butcher's first cut after slaughter." "You shouldn't touch it," he said. "It could be diseased." "I don't smell disease." She felt inside the body cavity. "The bones are like cardboard, and there's more. I need a good light." He helped her turn the carcass so that the light from the bare bulb shone on it, but this was not much of an improvement. She had to carefully finger the interior of the cavity. "The flesh is leathery, like skin, but inside the animal. And then it feels like raw flesh again. No, there are irregularities." He was silent as she continued the inspection. "Almost like nodules that I can feel. Small and pea-sized. They seem to hold some type of fluid." She withdrew her hand and moved to another animal. The light was bad for a close examination. He helped her turn it and steady it to the best advantage under the light. She squinted at the blast wound that had opened its chest. "Somebody's got into it ahead of us with a knife," she said. "Let's see if they left anything behind." And she inserted two fingers into the slit. The pressure of the bones and flesh prevented her from widening the entry wound. "It's like..." She hesitated. "This is soft tissue, organ tissue, embedded or interwoven into the flesh of the muscle." "What's that mean?" "It shouldn't be there." She straightened up. Boyd passed her his handkerchief, and she carefully wiped her hands on it. "These animals were either horribly diseased or..."
"Or?"
"Well, as for this one and that one, somehow their internal organs were blown right into the flesh without coming out through any type of exit hole. Everything scrambled internally."
They looked at each other.
"There's no weapon like that registered with NATO security for development.
We cannot be certain what caused this, not without a proper examination and analysis."
She nodded at the entire array of carcasses.
"There's plenty of residual scorching.
They may have been infected,
perhaps charred to halt the spread of some new disease being developed here."
She glanced up, aware that he was worried about exposure.
"No, Corporal Boyd, they are not diseased. These wounds are from trauma. There's very little decay of the flesh. Whoever has killed them wouldn't keep them unsecured if they were diseased with an experimental biological weapon."
She glanced at the nearest carcass and traced a scorch pattern that fanned out from the blast wound on it.
"There is some sort of residual pattern from whatever was done to it."
"We'd better get out of here," he said.
But just then a voice called,
"Who's in there?"
The door to the meat locker swung open.